Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Actor, comedian, author, and Grammy-winning bluegrass musician Steve Martin has a new book out called An Object of Beauty, set in New York City's art world in the 1990s. The book tells the story of the glamorous Lacey Yeager, a young up-and-comer in New York City's bustling art scene. And joining us to talk about his new book is none other than Steve Martin. Welcome.
Thank you very much. And by the way, I never realized you played that guitar on the intro song. That's fantastic.
Oh, I thought nobody would ever know it. Steve Martin is, in case you didn't know, an avid art collector. So I don't know. Do you have a question for Steve Martin about art? You can call in with that at 212-433-WNYC, or maybe he can provide some of our New York City artists with some inspiration, or you can post a comment online at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll also touch on the incident that many of you have heard or read about at the 92nd Street Y, where some people really didn't want to hear about art from Steve Martin.
Remember that this is a free show we're doing right now. It's free. There's no refunds.
No refunds, no matter what. We can't give you your membership dollars back either.
Thought about that.
Why did you have to bring that up? I brought it up. Not everyone would expect you, if they haven't followed your whole career, to write a novel focused on the art world. How did this book come to be?
Well, first, I'm stunned that there might be someone who hasn't followed my whole career. It just seems like, what are they doing with their lives? But I've been a writer a long time. When I looked back at my career, I realized I had been writing since the late 60s, not prose, but I'd been writing for television. I've been writing sketch comedy, and then into the I won't bore you with the whole story, but I really started writing prose in the late 80s when I started writing for The New Yorker. And then I wrote a play or several plays, and then I started writing some novellas, et cetera. And so I've been actually writing prose for a long time. So this is no surprise to me, although it's a surprise to other people who think of me as a movie actor and movie screenplay writer. So what was the question?
Well, the question was, how did this book and this content come
well,
to be?
Well, every once in a while, I get this urge to write something. And the first novella I wrote, Shop Girl, really came out of a desire to solve a problem. And it was to write about a romance, not necessarily a romance I had, but to write about an older man and a younger woman, about relationships I'd known, relationships I'd been in. And it was a kind of an emotional book. And then when I got a little prose experience under my belt, I wrote another book called The Pleasure of My Company. And I won't go into the details of that. But when I got the urge to write again, I was thinking about the old maxim, write what you know. And it's so valid, except for people who like to write about what they don't know. And then they research something for 5 years or 10 years and go to every bar in India and interview a million people.
Do it as kind of an intellectual research exercise.
Well, not exercise, but that's the way they do it. But I knew the art world pretty well, and because I'd been interested in it since my whole life. And I had a character in mind, and I blended the two. And that's how I got started on this book.
The author, Joyce Carol Oates, said this about your book. At first, you think An Object of Beauty will be a romantic comedy starring a strong-willed, very smart, and very ruthless heroine adventuress in the New York art world. Then, as its irresistibly rendered scenes unfold, you realize that you're experiencing, from the most intimate of perspectives, the quasi-tragic history of an era. Was that your intention, to show the history of the late 20th century through this story?
Of the late 20th century art world, it was. That was part of it. That was the background of it. I knew that, you know, beginning in the early 1990s, there was an arc of a story about the art world, because in 2009, it literally, for a moment, came to an end. This inflation of the art world, this kind of craze and mania. And so there was a beginning, middle, and end, at least in the milieu that this, my heroine, so-called Lacey Yeager, life, that her life took place in, that her growth took place in.
What was the mania? Are you talking about monetary valuation?
Yes, exactly, especially in contemporary art, where contemporary art inflated in price to the value of old masters. No, I wouldn't say old master. I'd say modern masters, I should say.
And the book talks about all kinds of New York art institutions, including the auction houses, Sotheby's and Christie's, plus MoMA and the Guggenheim. Have you hung around some of the auctions? Have you witnessed this or participated in them?
Yes. I've been to auctions, and I participated a little bit. But I'm not really an auction guy. I'm more a gallery guy. When I, in the 70s and 80s, when I came to New York, I would go to the galleries on Madison before I went to the hotel. I was that excited. And I got an education in art when I was traveling as a comedian I would usually play colleges, and they always had libraries. And usually there was a museum in every town. So I would go to the museums. I would go to the college libraries. And they had amazing rare books. I was interested in American art. So they had historical books on American art, 19th century American art, early 20th century American art. And I went and browsed them all.
It's so interesting about the on-tour lifestyle. Isn't it? Tom Seaver, the former baseball pitcher for the Mets, was on the show one time, and he talked about how when he was on the road playing ball, he had this weird schedule where he was playing in some strange city at night, usually, and he had the daytimes free. And some guys hung out and did very little, and he, to fill the time, started going to art museums. And so he got into art in sounds like a similar kind of way.
Yeah, I was already into it when I got there, but I know what you mean. There was there was some great paintings in places you would never think. Like Detroit has a fantastic Winslow Homer painting, and a Raphael Peel, and you would find these strange pictures that had migrated across the country. Kansas City has a great Chinese collection. How did it get there? I didn't put it there.
My guest is Steve Martin. His new book is An Object of Beauty. And let's take a phone call. Tom in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I had a question about the relative quality of contemporary art. I haven't read Mr. Martin's book, but he commented on the craziness of the market in the 90s, and I wonder how he feels about, has it impacted the quality of work coming from emerging artists? That's my question.
Well, you know, there is great quality in contemporary art. If it sounded like I was disparaging it, I wasn't. But you have to remember that when people say in a disparaging way, well, that's not as good as a Picasso, that's not as good as a, you know, whatever, Rembrandt. Of course it's not, because time has distilled, the early 20th century artists, and we have forgotten about all the average or mediocre artists. They've fallen by the wayside. But contemporary art shows you everything all at once. So we might be looking at, easily 100 artists from the earliest 20th century, but in contemporary art, you're looking at thousands and thousands of painters, and time has not really dealt with them yet. So obviously there's going to be inferior artists, being treated as first rate or second rate, second tier, I should say, not second rate, second tier.
Though there's also something about the now in contemporary art, if it's reflecting something in the culture at the time. For example, in the 90s, when your book is set, so much of the conversation was about political or identity art. Did you get into that?
Not so much in the book, no, because you just can't cover everything. But remember, also, contemporary art is easier to get. You can't just go back 100 years and start picking and choosing what you want. The irony is, of course, in contemporary art, when collectors thought they could start picking and choosing what they want, it suddenly became exclusive. And then there became a competition. And I make the point in the book that before, say, 1990 or 1985, that dealers tried to cultivate clients. And after 1995, clients tried to cultivate dealers.
Because it was such a seller's market?
Yes. Yeah, that. And dealers learn to make the stuff precious by holding it back and saying, well, we have a waiting list. I think Mary Boone is credited or discredited with creating the waiting list. But it was a real thing. There were people in line to get paintings by artists.
Joel in Union. You're on WNYC.
Not
Hello,
this
Joel.
Guy again.
Yeah. Oh, Joel, are you following Steve Martin around?
Yes, I am. And he's partially answered the question. I trip around the galleries of Chelsea, and I only find about a third of them interesting.
That's pretty good, then.
What's that?
That's pretty good odds.
I'll tell you, I write art reviews, and I have problems with postmodernism. I'm not giving my last name, but I'm sure my friends know who I am. And minimalist art, and there's a lot of it out there.
Go ahead.
There was an opening last week, a great fanfare, and I love the people who were in it. But it's hard for me to relate to it. And
So you want to know if Steve likes that style of art?
Yeah, well, I'm curious. What are you calling postmodernism? Because, I mean, art.
Well, first of all, it's art that's not about beauty. Forget beauty. That's outmoded. It's about the communication process, the breakdown of communication process, what we would consider to be outside of traditional or modernist art. It's not about any kind of interiority, emotional state.
So you put a lot on the table. I don't want to get a response.
Can you just name? Are you talking about, say, Robert Ryman or Agnes Martin? Are you dealing with something later than that? Because I don't even really know who you're talking about.
Ryman is one. I'd go into a lot of these are installations, beyond painting.
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, it's you can't like everything. I mean, there's artists I like, there's artists I don't like. It's not really that much of a problem, and all I can say is so.
You know? Right. So, if he positions himself as a critic, I would think that the job of a critic is not just to say, I think this is good, I think this is bad, but to try to find the meaning in it and help interpret it for users who are reading the art critic for whatever reason.
Well, meaning in art is one of the most difficult. By the way, I don't present myself as a scholar about this. You're asking a comedian who likes art, so I'm kind of stuck in an intellectual conversation here. But I do find that meaning as art is a very tricky area, because you're asking, then you get to the problem, well, what do you mean by meaning? I mean, what does the Mona Lisa mean? It doesn't really mean anything. It's a work of art, and it acts visually and emotionally. And as soon as you start writing about meaning, you're writing about writing. So it's a complicated issue to say what meaning is. But if you want to read people who write well about art, I always recommend Peter Sheldahl. And Adam Gopnik writes very clearly and well about art. And I recommend those.
What do you like about their writing?
It's clear, it's emotional, it's funny. You always know exactly what they're talking about. And I find when we get into highfalutin words, I get lost. And sometimes when I reread it, I get more lost. And I studied philosophy in college, and I read Kant. And I thought I understood it, but now when I look back, I thought, you know what? I was lost. So I had to read distillations of it. So
how do you feel that affected your comedy?
Oh, it affected it a lot. But I would say it was more the logic people who affected my comedy. For example, you never think of Lewis Carroll as a logician, but he was. And he wrote hilarious. They were kind of like syllogisms, but they weren't. But they were hilariously funny. It made me start thinking about.
Awa asks on our webpage, are there any exhibitions on view currently that you would recommend?
Who, me?
You.
Oh, gee, I haven't even been out. It's Christmas.
By the way, people think you live in L.A. I guess you spend a bunch of time in New York.
Well, I do because I travel. But, you know, I do these banjo shows now, so I'm all over the world. But I do live in L.A. The Anselm Kiefer show at Gagosian I thought was spectacular. I really enjoyed that. And the Hopper show at the Whitney I found – But I only went to these places because I was promoting my book, you know, so that's how I got to see them.
And while you were there, you had a good time.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Quite coincidentally. Steve Martin, my guest on WNYC, his new novel is called An Object of Beauty, set in the New York art world of the 1990s. So there was this bit of an incident, you might say, after you spoke at an event at the 92nd Street Y. A few weeks ago, for those who don't know about this, some members of the audience, and apparently more in an online viewing audience in remote locations, were apparently a bit upset that the discussion was primarily focused on art. I guess they had expected a different kind of conversation, one focused more on your career. Somebody from the Y actually intervened to alter the event in progress. What was that like for you?
Well, the more time gets between me and that date, the more bewildered I get because I've actually tried to figure it out. I was being interviewed by Deborah Solon, who is a noted interviewer and established art critic. And she's written books on – she's writing a book on Norman Rockwell. She's written a book on Joseph Cornell. And she's very good. And we've done this before. You know, she had interviewed me before about my art collection. It went very, very well. We had a very lively time. And after the event, you know, first of all, I was on one – sorry. I was on a plane, and when I landed, I found out they had refunded the money. So I was never even informed except – sorry – except, you know, after the fact. And I'll try to jump to the end. But I was talking to Saul, who ran the event, and I said, "Did you advertise this clearly?" And he said, "Absolutely. We always are very careful because we have a lot of people who do other things and they come to talk about their books." But then this was a closed circuit broadcast, and I found out. I read some blogs from other people who were at these closed circuit things, and they said they had like blow ups of me from the 70s. and people...
In other words, this is like those movie theater showings of the Metropolitan Opera now, right? People from various other cities were able to come and sit in a room and watch
right.
this live 92nd Street Y event from New York.
Right. And so the Y was getting emails. So I think other people outside the the hall were writing in emails. You know, they were misled. I guess, and they were getting sending in emails saying, "Hey, what's this? You know, it's change the subject in real time." And then we were sent a note like school children to change the subject, which is, threw us both off because Deborah's not you know, she's not up on Father of the Bride and bring it down the house. And by the way, either am I. You know, it was so long ago.
In all of me, when Lily Tomlin, never
yes,
mind.
I don't even know what to say. And so then it was just stammer, and you try to get back on track, and then the whole thing went into the toilet. And
so they
and
apologized.
Then I thought later, I thought, wait a minute, this is a charity that refunded the money. I mean, that's got to be really bad. And I felt like I was, you know, keeping kids from going to camp. I was so bad.
They must feel really bad. They apologized
they did
to
apologize,
the audience,
yes.
refunded the yeah. money. Then they apologized to you and to Deborah.
Yeah, but, you know, I've got 100 million headlines on the internet that say I was boring.
So after the incident, Stephen Colbert decided to poke a bit of fun at the Y and brought you on a show to talk specifically about
well,
art.
I must say that was after that show was already booked.
Uh-huh.
It was not booked in to get even with the Y or to even talk about the Y, but he had to talk about it because it had happened. So,
and we have a clip of that, and let me just set this up. In this clip, Stephen Colbert has just unveiled a portrait of himself and asks you to determine the value of it.
This is art, and we know it's art because the previous one of these...
It certainly takes the form of it. Go ahead.
It does. It's in a frame, and yes. I would like to know how much you would be willing to pay for last year's portrait.
Well, I'm computing the, first of all, the value of it. You have a lot of inkjet costs in it.
It's like three toner cartridges.
Three toner cartridges. Yes. So we're probably at about a $19 item. That's if I wanted it.
But wait, why wouldn't you want it? That is a portrait of me. It looks like me. And that's
part of the problem.
Okay, hold it.
So he introduced a series of renowned artists, Frank Stella, Shepard Fairey, Andre Serrano, who either offered commentary or provided their own embellishments to the Colbert portrait.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question for you is, did you rehearse that in advance, or does Colbert spring these things even
no,
on
No, it was
Steve
rehearsed.
Martin? It was?
Yes. Yeah. I give the show credit because they do rehearse this show. And so you get a chance to work up some, you know, funny answers and be prepared. But it also it's interesting blend of rehearsal and spontaneity because you're spontaneous at rehearsal. There's no lines or written lines. And then on the air, you have that to go on and you also are spontaneous on the air.
So Stella came out and said the portrait of Colbert was indeed art. Fairey took time to spray paint the Colbert painting with his Obey logo, and Serrano used a marker to give Colbert some facial hair. And your interest in the work appeared to grow as each artist added
well,
his own embellishment.
I was on TV doing a show.
a bit like Marcel Duchamp's urinal, which he signed and put on display in 1917.
Yeah.
And then the simple signed urinal later became one of the most valuable works of modern art. So I'm going to follow in the footsteps of Frank Stella and declare your book a work of art. I have it here right now, and I wonder if you would sign it so that we can increase the value artificially and also provide one of my producers, who's a huge fan, with an early Christmas
okay,
gift.
I'll be happy to sign that book.
There you go. I'm handing the book to Steve Martin.
But I do need a pen. Or I could just bless the book, actually.
I've got a pen. You can bless the book.
Frank Stella did the Colbert painting. And who's your? What's your producer's name?
Which producer is this for? This is for K-A-R-I-N.
Okay.
Karen. Camp, K-A-M-P.
Oh, usually the first name.
Oh, Karen is fine, yes.
Believe me, I've done this a million times. Signing my name. So
he's signing
and
his
now
name.
The book is worth just slightly less than the marked price.
And a little bit less than that than that urinal. So what's next for Steve Martin?
Oh, that's interesting. I have recorded a new bluegrass album of all original tunes with the Steep Canyon Rangers, and it's called Rare Bird Alert, and it will be out March 15th. And I think this is the first time I'm saying this. We have guest stars, the Dixie Chicks, and Paul McCartney singing on the record.
Wow, that's great.
And if you had told me when I was 16 years old that Paul McCartney would be singing a song I wrote, I would have said, who's Paul McCartney? Because they weren't really known then.
That, and yes, that he was singing on your album.
Yes.
By the way, you know, this whole get the comedians together and talk about art thing. Sarah Vowell from Public Radio was
yes.
on Jonathan Schwartz's Christmas party special.
I heard that.
On Sunday. And apparently somebody...
And so was
like 15 minutes on abstract expressionism, and people could not get enough of it, you know? Aww. I think it was just the crowd that you had.
I'd love to hear Don Rickles on abstract expressionism.
So get it together next time.
Yes,
okay.
I will. It was just an error on my part.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
Happy New Year. An Object of Beauty, a novel by Steve Martin. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.